Hi, I'm Chris Ippolito, and welcome to Get Coach 360, where I'm documenting my journey from employee to entrepreneur while featuring the coaches that are helping me along the way. Each episode, these coaches provide actionable advice to help me and you, the audience, find more success as entrepreneurs. I invite you to join the journey so we can go and grow together.
Welcome to another episode of Get Coach 360. In this episode, Chris sits down with Lee Chambers, workplace well-being consultant and environmental psychologist, speaker, radio presenter, as well as founder and life coach over at Essentialize. Lee discusses the science and biological processes of sleep and how to optimize it. Lee also opens up about how one particular crisis in his life left him completely immobile over a five-day period and forced him to shift his mindset from victim to victor, take ownership of his situation, and find the opportunities and challenge, ultimately leading him down a road to recovery in which he brought back mental tools he found he could share with others to help them in facing their own challenges. Lee also shares other techniques that he feels contribute to a healthier and more productive life, such as meditation and how to find the foods that are right for you and your unique microbiome. And as always, we'll close with Lee sharing his advice for how you can take action now to level up wherever you need it most.
Hi, Lee.
Hi, Chris.
How are you?
Well, thank you.
Great. Welcome to the Get Coach podcast. Glad to have you on. I'd love if we could just dive into your story. This is how I like to start every episode so we can all get more acquainted with you. But do you mind sharing your story as far as your personal journey to get to where you're at? For those of us that are our guests, audience watching on video, they'll see in the background that you've got a life coaching business, but you've got quite the story as far as how you got into that business. Do you mind sharing?
Oh, certainly. So I'm based in Preston, which is in the north of England in the UK. And I grew up here. I had a relatively stable upbringing. My parents worked very hard to give us a good level of housing and make sure we were fed and watered. And our basic needs were met. And I'm very grateful to them for that. What kind of happened is I went to university and started the transition from moving from being a child to becoming an adult. And I moved away. And for the first 6 months, I found that quite easy, to be honest. The freedom to do as I wanted and to take kind of control of my life really fueled me on to do quite well at university. Unfortunately, in the second 6 months, that then reversed and I started to struggle and have the elements of, okay, so who am I as a man? How do I identify as an adult? What do I actually want to do beyond education? And started to struggle a little bit. And I chalked in a presentation at university in front of my whole year, which really hit my confidence quite a lot. And that led me to have some mental health challenges that led me to isolate myself. So in many ways, that's the reality of having quite a stable childhood. Is the first time anything went a bit, challenging. I didn't really have the emotional intelligence and tools to deal with it. However, I managed to get myself back into a place where I was stable and happy and finished university and got myself a graduate job in a national bank working to become a financial advisor. This was unfortunately in 2007. So I got onto my grad scheme with 16 other graduates. They intended to keep three of us. I worked incredibly hard doing all the things that you don't want to do, but showing that I was a resilient graduate and I was equipped for the workplace. And after 6 months, a number of advisors above us and the advisors above them became redundant due to the credit crunch. And I kind of started to worry about my own position. Fast forward a week and I was pulled into the office and told that my professional financial advisory qualifications was being pulled. I wasn't going to be able to complete that. And that was really challenging to take because I felt, well, that's kind of part of what I'm doing. A week later, I was then made redundant from the job. So I've completely lost a career and the professional qualification and found myself at home thinking, right, I need to choose a new path. So that led me on two separate angles to set up a video game business from my bedroom in my parents' house and to go and work in local government in a job which was slightly less rigorous and allowed me the ability to start developing myself. I continued both the business and working at local government while doing qualifications in performance nutrition, soccer coaching, and strength and conditioning training. And that kind of gave me a broad physiological spectrum of abilities to help people, but also in many ways to help myself get into a better place with my body. That took me on a journey to then help unemployed people get back into work, boost their skills, but also boost their confidence so they could go and interview well and identify what path they wanted to take. And that kind of, that idea of getting people clarity on the direction kind of started and sowed that seed of life coaching within me, as well as helping them to then move forward and empower them to go back into the workplace. After doing that job for a while and feeling really fulfilled, I then moved into elite sport for 6 months, using my qualifications in nutrition and coaching and finding a whole new world of cutting edge science and ridiculous amounts of money being spent to get people to perform at an elite level for a very short amount of time. And that changed my worldview, but it also made me slightly, in some ways, sad that so much money was being spent on a few individuals and could have a massive societal impact, which again kind of led me to have that fire of I want to help more people. In 2014, I became sick, unfortunately, losing the ability to walk over the course of 5 days. And that was a significant shifting point in my life. I really found that a challenging time. My wife was 6 months pregnant. My son was 18 months old. And I was in a hospital bed, unable to shower myself, feed myself properly. And that was really, in many ways, the turning point for me understanding my own direction, my own purpose. And I took ownership of that disease and started getting back on my feet through rehab, hydrotherapy. It was a really challenging time, but I had the mindset that when my daughter was born and when she started to walk, I was going to be walking with her. I was going to be playing outside in the garden with my children. And that real power of why got me through those dark days, challenging days, having to get up, trying to get myself mobile again. And again, in many ways, the physical therapy that I was offered was absolutely amazing. I cannot fault the NHS in the UK for what they did for me. But I had to take ownership of it myself and really start to drive on and think, how can I use my experience and my qualifications to not only help myself, but to help other people? And that real burning desire and direction that I got, that clarity from sitting there reflecting, like, I've been so ungrateful for my mobility before I lost it. I've been so ungrateful for many things until you face that challenge and that crisis. And I started to grow as a man, as a husband, as a father through that suffering. So I then took that as a incentive to think, right, what is my purpose? I'm going to go and help other people. So driving that forward, I then did additional qualifications in sleep, started to optimize my life so I could come off my medication. And now by in June, I'll be off that medication through lifestyle alone. That led me to think, right, okay, so I definitely need to find a way to extrapolate this out, help other people, because that's what I want to do. That's the underlying purpose and theme throughout my life. And that's led to me today having Essentialized, the life coaching company, and Essentialized, the workplace wellbeing company.
Wow, that is, like, that's so crazy. It's insane how it typically... All the conversations I've had, there tends to be a very common theme. And one of them being, it's, and I mentioned this on our pre-interview call, which is why I wanted to have you on, was people have to, it almost feels like people have to go through this trial by fire to really solidify almost, to forge, that's the better word, to forge what it is that they want to do in life. And it's, And I love the fact that now you, because of what you've gone through, you want to share that experience with other people. It's kind of the same idea with why I started this podcast, was I went through my own trials and how I got through it was having mentorship or coaching. It was more mentorship, not necessarily coaching, but now that's why I do the podcast, is to help other people find perhaps a coach or a mentor, or indirectly coach and mentor them so that we can help them together get through those challenges. So at what point along that journey that really got you focused on that personal development? Was it back in post-secondary when when you failed in front of your classmates, or was it during the banking, or was it a series of these events that finally just kept reinforcing that I need to work more on me and invest in myself? Or was there one particular moment that you shared that really triggered that for you?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because if I look at my journey on a wider scale, that seems to be weaved into everything that I've done over the years. But until you sit back and reflect on it, you don't see those underlying themes and those trends which bind your life together, everything from the jobs you've had to the hobbies to the choices that you pick in your education to the friends and people that you surround yourself with. So if I look back, it is a theme throughout my life, but I didn't really grasp that until I was unwell and had the time to stop, really stop. And I was literally stopped in that hospital bed. I wasn't moving anywhere. And that gave me a real lot of time. In some ways, people have that time now while we're facing challenges that are making people slow down a little bit. But I had that time to think and reflect and look for all these experiences and think, you know, these jobs, I was helping people. This job, I was helping people. In this job, I was indirectly helping people. What was I doing at university? I was helping people. And in some ways, my experience at university actually numbed me a bit as I struggled to deal with that. And that kind of made me put a little bit of a suit of armor on, just to try and protect myself from failure and challenge. And it wasn't until I started to dig that a bit deeper that I realized that actually my failures, there was bits in there to be taken. My struggle at university and my failure to when I was speaking was due to me not being prepared enough. It's that simple. But in that initial period, I, instead of looking back on the failure and trying to take something from it, I hid from the failure and took it personally, attached emotion to it, and thought it was me, thought it represented who I was, someone who couldn't speak publicly. And I had that as a limiting belief for a few years afterwards due to me not going back in and thinking, you know what, it was my fault at the end of the day. Like, remove blame and shame, but you weren't prepared, and you know you weren't prepared.
Yeah, that... very true. There's a lot of moments in life when if you look back to it and you take an honest look and view of the situation, and rather than looking at it as from the perspective of victim, being a victim, and you look and you try and shift it to accountability. What could I have done differently to have created a different outcome? And like you said, you realize I didn't prepare. That's why that happened. And there's so many other steps and that so other, even some of the more extreme stuff, not to say that, you know, you developed a condition and illness because of your own actions, but it's almost the exercise being, well, what if, what could I have done differently? Is there, and just, it's more just taking that full accountability versus looking at external forces and saying, well, it was that or this, and I had zero control. Cause you may actually have had zero control, but taking that power back and having the accountability has been a big shift for me. It sounds like in your story, it was kind of the same idea. And because when you were sharing, like you were already focused on health, doing a lot of things for yourself to maintain a healthier lifestyle. You even transitioned to helping high performance athletes with their health and mindset, I think is as well, probably what you were doing, right? You were helping them with mindset as well. Okay. So you were doing a lot of work to take care of yourself, and still something happened that impacted your health. But that mindset you developed leading up to it is probably what allowed you to get through it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree. I kind of see that when I lost the job through redundancy in the training, that kind of made me kick into it. Right. Well, I'm going to need to go and train myself. I'm going to need to go and build a business for my own career. And I kind of see that kind of ownership bounce where something bad happens to you, but you own the opportunity that comes from it. And I didn't really kind of see in some ways, because quite often we can live with our heads down a bit as we live day to day. And there was that point where I was running the business and working a job, and that kind of left me without much time to think what I was actually doing. But I kind of knew I was going in a direction that, you know, interested me, and I wanted to look after myself more. And it could have been easy when I became unwell, because it happened over the course of 5 days. I went from fully independent, fully mobile, playing sports, working in sports, to lying in hospital bed, not being able to look after myself. And it's wrong to suggest that you don't have thoughts of like, oh, why me? I'm 29, you know, mm-hmm. How bad is this going to be? And that kind of unknown of not knowing where your health is going to go in the future. It's challenging and it's difficult to kind of alchemize that, especially at first. But the more and more I started to think, okay, so it has happened and we're all going to go through suffering in our lives. It's like an ECG, you're going up and down, you know, and currently I'm down in the pit of the wave, but I'm going to come back up and it's up to me to make sure that peak is as high as it can be. And that really kind of, that almost that vision in my head of life being like a ripple, up and down, up and down, up and down. And this might be the biggest down in my life, but geez, it's a message that, you know, you've got to keep going. You've got to be resilient. And yeah, that mindset, that thinking, right, I can own this and make it happen. And you see people in the most difficult crisis situations, you know, they become stronger. We are, as a species, we're awful when we're comfortable. And when we're uncomfortable, we become adaptive. And when we're really uncomfortable, we become innovative and creative and find ways to, you know, take ownership and not be a victim, but start to transition towards being a victor and actually looking at, you know, opportunities that come from challenge. And we start to kind of shift that mindset. And yeah, in many ways for me, I see that throughout my journey, but I wasn't even that aware of it. I didn't have the awareness of what I was actually doing until I actually stepped back and started to look at myself in third person more often and realize that, well, this is me as kind of like a little actor in my own life. And in some ways I'm just a story and it's complex, but it's really interesting. And it really means that for me, fulfillment and success is helping other people to become aware of how that works. We're so interconnected mentally and physically. We're incredible beings, but we're only on that beginning, that journey to understand ourselves.
Yeah, I love that message. There's a book. Have you read Extreme Ownership, or are you familiar with it, by Jocko Willings? Yeah. That was a fantastic book that really helped me kind of shift my mindset around that perspective of, okay, there's going to be things that happen in life, but if I take that perspective of ownership, it like you pull that power back into your own hands. That was a great book and I highly recommend it. Something you've said a few times is it took time for you to gain that awareness in reflection to all those events that occurred, basically leading all the way up to being in the hospital for 5 days. And so do you have a practice of intentionally taking time and setting it aside to think, to ponder, to reflect? Do you have a practice now of that?
Yeah. So I actually do that every morning. So before I go into other people's worlds through email or social media, or even into my family's worlds, I wake up and have a morning routine where I'm completely integral to me. So I'll wake up, hydrate and wash my face. And then I will go and have some reflective silence or meditation. And that kind of allows me to explore myself before any stimuli or inputs come from anywhere else. And I also do take one day every month to go and have effectively a think day. So I remove myself to a hotel, take some books and just reflect and journal and start to really channel that, okay, so you need to separate yourself out of this busy, you know, cyclical world that you're in. Step away, breathe, and just think. And that kind of reflective practice is so important. It's so easy to get on that treadmill of life. And we all have to find our direction. And even when you've found that direction, you've got massive clarity, you gradually start to angle off and tangent away as life pulls you about and the winds blow you. And it's actually important to get yourself back onto direction by stepping back and looking and thinking, right, the bigger picture, are you heading in the right direction or have you been blown off path? Have you decided to take a shortcut that's taking you back to the bottom of the mountain you were climbing? And it's starting to look and think, okay, we actually need to build that reflective practice into our lives. We use reflective practice in so many different disciplines, which require you to be supervised and to develop, from coaching to medical, and especially, you know, teaching and education. But that kind of ability to reflect and look at things, look at processes in a cycle, but also look at your own life and the surroundings and your relationships with other people, what you're looking to achieve, and bring it all together, you know, your dreams, your ambitions, and start to think, am I aligned? Because it's very easy to fall out of alignment, because life isn't straight. Life isn't always easy. And you do have a lot of, you know, responsibilities as an adult in the world to make a difference while staying on your own path. And you're not, there's so many people out there who've not even begun that journey to find the path that they're climbing, that they're trapped. Sometimes I speak to people and they are working incredibly hard on a path in the opposite direction of where they want to go. And the harder they work, the quicker they move away from where they want to go.
Yeah.
It's almost counterproductive and paradoxical, but you've got to, if you spend that time, and it's like anything, like research, whether it's market research for a business or keyword research for a website, if you do the research to see the direction you're going in the first place, all the work that you then do will accelerate you in the right direction on the right path quicker towards the goal that you're aiming to get for. So it's just about, actually, sometimes that preparation, reflective time, it sharpens your arrow, it sharpens your compass, and it just leads you onto a more optimized journey. And that's what we're kind of looking for in life.
Right. Yeah, I really like that. What's the daily routine? How long is your, I guess, what does your routine look like on a daily basis? So you mentioned you wake up, wash your face. How long are you, I guess, thinking or meditating or whatever practice that you're actually doing?
Okay, so my typical morning routine is wake up at 6:15. And I usually get a good 45 to 50 minutes before the children come and invade the living room. So I spend that 50 minutes, spend 10 minutes on meditation, reflective silence, and sometimes a bit of prayer. And then I spend 10 minutes listening to some kind of positive audio input. So, you know, Get Coached is quite a good one.
Over the week, you
get to listen to the whole episode. It's a really good thing to integrate in there. And then I spend 10 minutes journaling, 10 minutes reading, and then 10 minutes stretching or exercising. And those five elements allow me to then go into the day in a real positive frame of mind. And if I'm lucky enough that the children are not down by 7 o'clock, I'll just spend 10 minutes visualizing and doing some interrogative affirmations as well. And that hour, it's a real power hour. And then I go in, I've got my children, I make the breakfast, I spend time with them, I read them some books, give them a hug, get them ready for school. And, you know, it's suddenly not as stressful a morning as it once was, because I'm in that positive frame, positive mindset, and it gives you real momentum. And also, I then, because in the middle of the day, you're working, and so many people don't have that time, but we have the ability to work on our AM and our PM so much more than the middle of our day. So I also have a PM routine where I make sure that I have I effectively call it a digital sunset. So I put all my digital devices away in a specific place an hour before I go to bed. So I'm not stimulated by blue light or triggered by notifications and things taking my mind off, and I look for ways to wind down. I avoid those really intense conversations. I've already had curfews on anything like caffeine or alcohol and big meals, even though I don't tend to consume that much because I try to look after myself and be mindful. And then kind of build that relaxing hour downwards, making sure I'm not, you know, taking on a lot of light that stops my melatonin production. And just, you know, kind of disconnect. It's so easy to stay connected in this world where you're constantly being pinged by emails. I mean, I run two businesses, so in some ways you have to make that time, that space for yourself. Otherwise people will step into it, your business will invade it, and you've got to find that way to get a work-life integration that works for not only for you personally, but for all the people around you. And, you know, in a world that we live in that's increasingly digital, it's important to kind of have those breaks from that stimulation and that, you know, those digital devices. Because in a lot of ways, they're built with psychological hooks to keep you
right
on them. That's how they make the money, for you to be falling into the app over and over again.
So,
like I say to my clients, you've got the most control over your AM and your PM. And it's important to set that sleep environment up, because sleep is the fundamental driver of performance and health. And we all take it for granted, a bit like breathing. It's incredibly powerful, but because we just do it automatically every night and fall into bed, we don't ever think about optimizing it that often. And it's absolutely massive to our health and our performance.
Yeah, I'd love to dive into that a little bit more, because I agree, especially right now, for the last 7 months, having a newborn, I always found a lot of value in sleep, find a lot more now. But I'd love to ask a couple questions about how to optimize, or what are some actually, let's be a little bit more specific. What are some of the, what would be the first thing or the first two things you would recommend somebody do to help with optimizing their sleep? And because I know you can go quite deep with this, but what would be those like quick wins that somebody could implement to help them with their sleep?
Yeah. I mean, the first one I'd actually say is just aim to get an extra hour. So set a PM alarm an hour before you would normally go to bed. And I think the second one is quite abstract, but just set a bright line. Say to yourself the mantra, what's more important, entertainment or actualization? And that's something that I use. And really, in many ways, your sleep drives everything. And a child who's underslept, they generally behave like a nightmare. So yep. Does an adult, but no one says, oh, he's had a bad night's sleep. And I mean, I do work in the workplace, and sleep causes people to make mistakes. It causes conflict. It causes people to not perform at the level that they can. It stifles their creativity. And what it really does in the big scheme of things is causes people to become unwell, people to, you know, if someone falls asleep at the wheel, they cause more damage than a drunk driver, because they've got no reaction, not delayed reaction. They've got no reaction.
Yeah.
So it's incredibly important. And again, for many people, two things: set an intention to go to bed and set an alarm. We set alarms to wake up. It's an invasion of our privacy first thing in the morning. Yeah. In many ways, some of us have to do it because we have defined social wake up times. Why not set an alarm that reminds you to go to bed and actually do that? It's so easy to fall into a Netflix continue. It doesn't even, you have to get up to turn it off now before it goes on to the next episode. So yeah, just have that intention and realize that sleep is everything.
What, I like those ones, because those are definitely easy things to implement. Now let's go a little deeper, because I like to hear some of the more advanced and unknown approaches that people can take, or even to the point of some would even consider extreme. So what are some of those a little bit more, we'll just use the term extreme, things that people could incorporate to help optimize their sleeping.
Okay, so I mean, there's all sorts of interesting things at the cutting edge, and they're starting to gradually become available to people. So it's sleep is very individual, and you need to experiment because we're all really bespoke in our sleeping. Naturally, experiment with the temperature of the room, and then our sleep equipment, such as looking at weighted blankets, our pajamas, what type of pillow, and those things support us while we sleep. We actually spend so many hours of our life in a bedroom, yet we never actually think to optimize that space. Mm-hmm. Like, you spend all the time decorating the living room and deciding what furniture you're going to get, and the bedroom's just like, yeah, here we go, store some clothes, here's a bed. And it's crazy. And kind of on the cutting edge, technology is coming more into it. I think one of the really big things that's come out recently is if your body is digesting, we get effectively a brain cleaning while we sleep. And if our body's digesting, it's not as effective. And glymphatic fluid from our spine is pushed through our brainstem up into our brain and cleans out all the, you know, the toxins, the tau, and all the byproducts from all the neural processes that we do throughout the day. Now, if your body is digesting, it takes so much energy that you don't have the energy to push the fluid through and up, so you don't get that cleaning. So what we suggest is that people, if you're going to eat a big meal, eat it 4 hours before, and on one day a week, eat 4 hours and then don't eat anything else until you sleep. That'll allow you to get a full clean of your brain. Mm. And again, we're in such early days because that's only really over the last year been spotted on fMRIs when they've been doing experiments to look at other things to do with sleep. So yeah, in so many ways, in the cutting edge, it's really interesting because we've only really been looking at sleep from a scientific perspective since 1940, which when we look at it is 80 years. We've been looking, the ancient Greeks and Romans were doing surgery, they were doing biology, and sleep is such a young science. There's 1,000 sleep papers every year. There's like 3 a day. Like I try and catch up on them every week, and there's like 10 new papers a week at least. It's crazy. And they're all seen, there's counter arguments about certain different things, but technology will play more and more a part if we start to learn more about, you know, chronography and how our, because we have inbuilt chronotypes, and our circadian rhythms and ultradian rhythms in our cells beat to a certain cycle. And as we start to align with them, I think that's probably one of the biggest shifts as well. As we start to, you look at our DNA and our PRPR3 receptors and actually see, okay, so what are we designed to do? What times are we designed to sleep? Some people are designed to sleep between 11 and 9. Mm. Some people are designed to sleep between, you know, 9 and 7. Some people are designed to sleep between 7 and 4. Some people can actually live on 6 hours sleep quite well. Some need 8. It's so individual. But the more we start to look at our genome, the more we'll be able to see what exactly we need, what works best for us. And our sleep cycles can be, you know, slightly condensed or slightly expanded. And it does change as we get older as well. So it's kind of, as we're able to get that data, more analyze things more and understand things more, it won't be long before I'll be able to give someone a specific sleep schedule based on their DNA, their lifestyle. And yeah, it's kind of moving away from that, here's some basic sleep hygiene advice, and we don't really know how it all works because it's mysterious. But the kind of like the personalized meal plan for someone based on their preferences, that's getting closer.
Yeah.
The personalized sleep plan. We are gradually, you know, garnering the data and the technology to be able to give people bespoke solutions, which is where it's at, where people are able to, because at the moment people have to experiment to find exactly what works for them. And hopefully it won't be long before science combined with human intelligence and emotional intelligence can actually bring that forward. And because I spent 2 years taking my nutrition stuff in and out to find what worked for me and having to record it down. I've got 4 journals worth of information just on my own nutrition. Hopefully soon we'll have technology to distill that very quickly rather than having such an extrapolated process, because I can't physically do that with my clients. It's just too onerous.
Yeah, it wouldn't be scalable. And I know there are some companies out there already helping or pushing that kind of initiative and that vertical, because Viome, are you familiar with Viome?
The microbiome company.
Yeah, so that's one company. I know there's a couple other ones that they'll send a report back to you with a list of foods that you should eat because they're superfoods for you. There's the category of neutral, like it's fine. You can eat it. It's not good or bad for you. It's fine. And then they'll list out the foods that you should avoid, which is really interesting because there's obviously certain kinds of food that for the most part we should all be avoiding or minimizing, but they'll go into they'll be looking at everything. And the podcast I listened to with the founder, the example he shared was, I think it was spinach was the food he was kind of using to illustrate his point. Spinach is generally known as a healthy food, and some, I think, consider it a superfood. But he's like, but that's not necessarily the case for everybody. Because of your microbiome, spinach might actually be toxic for some people and have a very negative effect. And so that's kind of the whole purpose behind testing your gut and your microbiome, is to find out really those kinds of foods that are you should be avoiding based on your microbiome and the ones that you should be incorporating because your body wants that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it'll be great when we get to that point where we can do the same thing with sleep. What's your body's optimal temperature to be able to have the best sleep and just all aspects of it? How long, what time, just all of it. I very much look forward to when we have that kind of technology.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because the thing is, we're all bio-individual, and that goes for our microbiome, our gut enzyme makeup, our circadian rhythm. We all beat to a certain rhythm. And we're only just starting to get to that point where we understand that we can map that out. So when we mapped the genome back out 30 years ago, we thought, you know, this is it. And now we realize epigenetics mean that expression gets turned on and off. And that can be done through, you know, both like genetically and environmentally. And two twins can be completely different because they've been exposed to different things in a lifetime. And that in itself, 30 years ago, we thought we've done it. We've decoded it, and oh no, you've not. We're ever so complicated.
It's like an onion, many, many layers.
Many, many layers.
Well, we've covered a lot, Lee. It's been a fun conversation. I like what being able to go more into that nerdy space of technology and optimizing health with technology. But one of the questions I love asking all my guests is, what's that one piece of advice you would want to share with the audience to help them out in leveling up wherever they need it most?
I would definitely say it would be to reflect and look back on your previous mistakes and failures, put a lab coat on as if you're a scientist and pick them apart and find the little gems in there. The little insights that you can take forward and utilize them to not make the same mistake again, or to grow something bigger than you tried to originally. There's a lot of power in that.
Yeah, this is very good advice. You had mentioned it earlier about tracking your nutrition. I did a whole year of that, and just the habit of tracking it ended up helping me get to the desired weight goal that I wanted. It was very interesting, the results of it. So if people wanted to learn more about you or connect, what's the best place for them to reach out to you?
The best place would be my website, which is leechambers.org.
.org. Okay. I'll make sure that's in the show notes, as well as all those other channels that like the social platforms that they might be able to reach out to. It's been a great conversation. I'm glad I was able to have you on. We had some technical difficulties on our very first intro call, but I'm glad we worked through it and had you on. So yeah, absolute pleasure. Looking forward to some future conversations with you, Lee, especially on the scientific stuff. I like that kind of thing.
Oh, definitely, Chris. It's been a privilege.
All right. Take care, Lee.
Thank you, Chris.
Bye. Thanks for listening to Get Coach 360. If you're looking for more information, you can head over to our website, which is getcoach360.com. You'll find the show notes for this and every other episode there. And if getting actionable advice every week from professional coaches is something you want more of, then make sure to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes.